are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
I really appreciate you coming on the show today, Serious Growth. And, you know, there's one thing that I can tell from the bio that I got from you is that you seem to have had a long, fulfilling career up to this point, and you understand the importance of branding.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, let me see here. Brimstone, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. And do you go by that name? Is that just something like you're almost in character just to stay consistent with that brand? Or tell me about that.
Well, all right. So basically, you know, Brimstone in general started obviously from my wrestling career. I've been professional wrestling for 20 years, you know, but I've been in entertainment since I'm five. So yeah. I started Sesame Street and Romper Room, then I toured in music, then toured in pro wrestling. But in pro wrestling, you know, I already learned from music that you needed to build a brand in order to kind of get to the next level and make sure that the brand was always working for you. You know what I mean? So getting into pro wrestling, I wanted something that would be strong, that would be beneficial moving forward, not just while I was in the ring, but while I was well out of it as well. Something that was, organic enough that I can kind of put out there. And even if you didn't know who I am, you think you know who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And I achieved that with the Brimstone name. And, you know, from there, I was able to take it and spin it into everything from comics to animation to kids' books, personality. So to where your original question, like the character and so forth, I was back when in the wrestling days, you know, Brimstone, I'd have to turn it on, brother, and, you know, like that. But, you know, for now, Brimstone is just an extension of myself. So, you know, it's like, what is it, Spinal Tap? You're turning the amp up to 11. So you're just turning me up to 11 and you got, you know, Brimstone. So
I think everybody
calls me Brim.
Yeah, I think good to know. I think it's very smart. That's the reason why I brought it up, because those two things really stood out for me. I'm curious to know how you got into being a child actor. Is it something that you got in like through your parents, or how did that work out?
So my mother, at a young age, my mother had started bringing me to Manhattan, and we had a lot of opportunity with, doing reads for like Rice Krispies and A1. And like, these are the ones that I remember. But she was bringing me in and out of Manhattan. And then eventually I wound up getting the deal with Sesame Street and Romper Room, where I was doing the child acting thing. And I did a couple of episodes of each, and my mother had brought me in and out, and, you know, things had started getting a little bit, you know, crazy, and people were requesting. And it turned out that, you know, a lot of the auditions, cause it's not like today where we can self tape and send in and, you know, and so forth. Now it's kind of, you know, back then it was, you have to go to the studio, you have to sit there or wherever they were doing the casting and do the whole to do. So, my parents were divorced, and my father, some of the auditions would be on days that he'd have me, or, you know, and he's like, well, no, it's on my day, you can't go. And eventually my mother just kind of threw up her hands, and that was that. So it kind of was put on a hiatus. But, you know, the fact that I had already started doing it when I was younger kind of opened up the doors, you know what I mean, to when I got a little bit older and I started playing drums and, you know,
yeah, so forth. Let me ask you this, because on the front of it, just getting to know you here for a few minutes, You have a very outgoing personality. Were you always like that? Because I know from my own experiences that, you know, some people think I'm pretty outgoing, but I'm actually pretty shy, actually at the heart, you know, in some ways. And I've kind of learned to overcome that. So were you always this, you seem to be, again, outgoing. Were you always like that? And even like when you were young like that, did you have problems in front of the camera? And if you did, how were you able to overcome that?
Honestly, I've always been very comfortable in front of the camera. I like to be the center of attention. I am that guy. Yeah. I'm not a jokester. I'm not a prankster, but, I'm the guy that likes to, you know, kind of be in front of things and I like to have control. I'm not going to lie. But what do you call it? In terms of, when I was younger, it was the same thing. I did plays. I was in front of people all the time. And
yeah. So you know, grew up with way of life almost, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when how did you transition out of, how did you, obviously, you know, one of the things I've said before in this, in every field, is that the mark of a good program or somebody who's been around is that they're able to sustain themselves in a way that, you know, makes that happen. It just doesn't happen. And so what took you from childhood acting? What was your next step?
So, you know, remember, I was a kid. So I was 5 years old. I'm 46. Obviously, there's a hell of a lot of time in between.
Yeah.
But, you know, the first thing that kind of became a love for me, and it all comes full circle. But with my first love, I used to draw. I was an artist when I was a kid, you know, and I spent a lot of time coming up with different characters and so forth. I fell in love with superheroes and, you know, G.I. Joe and whatnot. And so for me, like I wanted to be a famous comic book artist is what I wanted to be. And, you know, then I started to have to take an option in school for an instrument. And, you know, first I got the violin and I certainly didn't want to do that. And then I got the drums. So as soon as the drumsticks went in my hand, I said, this is my love and this is my passion. So I started playing drums, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I played drums all through elementary school through private school, high school, you know, college. And then I went on tour, you know, and I started doing the music thing right out of college. Matter of fact, I never even finished college because I went right out on tour immediately. And, you know, I was the guy who was always, because my father is, you know, in sales and so forth. My father was always like, sales is everything. Sales is a part of everything. You should always know how to sell. You should always know how to present something. And so I wound up, you know, being the guy who promoted the band. I did it organically. I did it, you know, old school guerrilla marketing, made sure that people knew who I was. And like, you know, like you mentioned earlier, building that brand. So yeah, it was different than being the child actor, but I already did that. You know, it was already in the bucket. Now this was something brand new and special, but I was still in front of an audience. Funny enough, in the back, I was in the back seat, you know, playing the drums behind everybody, but I was the guy making everything happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, the issues with that is that, you know, when you're in a one-way marriage, it's very difficult to begin with. But when you're in a five-way marriage, it's a very, 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 very big, you know, I guess a deal. That's the best way to do it. It's a big deal to be able to, you know, keep everything kind of in a good, you know, status. And the problem is in a five-way marriage, everybody has their own ideas and beliefs and so forth. So when you got, you know, one person that, you know, is, you know, dead set on being a punk kid and living in a van, you know what I mean? And yeah, that's not what I wanted, you know, and another one is, you know, kind of teetering on that. Another one never wants to do interviews. And I just said, you know what, I'm sick of being in a five-way marriage. I want to do something that's going to be just me, that I could build, that I could brand myself alone. And, you know, and then, you know, I didn't even find pro wrestling. Pro wrestling found me, even though I was a huge fan. Pro wrestling found me, and then hence the start of Brimstone and the true, you know, quote unquote, what people say, empire, that is me and the things that I do. I hope I'm making sense.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian power burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And one of the things funny that you in the band, one of the things I like to watch, Brim, is I like to watch how people from different walks of life become successful. It's very interesting to me because, you know, a lot of the stuff that goes on to becoming successful, it happens in the same, you know, depending on whether you're in a band. And I watch a lot of documentaries on bands, how they came to be and, you know, their whole journey. And it's so amazing how so many of them, you know, like what you're saying, to deal with five personalities, and in some cases pretty strong personalities, because like you're saying, everybody's got their own ideas, And I just watched something this past weekend, how it's fascinating to me. And again, I don't know how far you got into this thing. You said you toured, but it was fascinating to me to see how the all this music comes together. And so many of it is done individually. And they just have somebody who's an engineer and they make magic out of that, man. It's phenomenal to me how that happens, you know? And then, and then it, one of the things that's pretty common was it takes a while for them to find sort of who they are as a band, because otherwise you're competing with a shitload of people that think they're the greatest in sliced bread, but they're really not.
And it takes everybody thinks they are.
Yeah. And how did you, I'd like to just, if you don't mind, I'd like to focus on that. Like when you toured, did you guys get to that point where you went through these patches to where you found your style, who you guys were as an identity?
Yeah. I mean, we went pretty far. I mean, we were offered, I got us a gig. And we did all the big places, CBGBs and all, you know, all the memorable spots and, you know, here in New York, as well as all around the country. And, people were playing us overseas and the whole nine yards. And that was before the internet. We had the opportunity. I booked us on a gig, from a couple of friends. Cause again, I'm a very authentic guy. I like to make new friends. I like to meet new people. I like to, you know, see where we can work with each other and so forth. And, one of the cats from the band Red Belly, this guy, Eddie, we had a mutual friend, funny enough, Bagel, who is his nickname. And, he's still in the industry and he connected us. And Ed had said to me, he goes, look, we need an opening band for this big event we're doing. It's at one of the big clubs, yada, 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 you know, and probably be a few thousand people there. I was wondering if you guys would, you know, open. I'm like, sure, absolutely, no problem. We set it up and they were signed to East West Recording, big label. And after we played, it was a hard to follow set. And I'm not saying we were the best, but it was a very hard to follow set. The people loved us. And East West reps came up to me afterwards and said, we'd really like to sign you guys. And the one and two guys that wanted to live in a van didn't want to sell out. And that's why we didn't continue. That's when I said, I'm done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that was when I was done with that. And again, at the end of the day, we recorded a whole bunch, we toured a whole bunch. I did a lot of stuff in the industry. We did know who we were. But it was not the end all be all.
Sometimes after you get into something, at least it happened to me, it's like, okay, this is not what I signed up for. You know, and I think you were smart enough to make that call instead of getting dragged through to where it gets really bitter. Maybe it did, but I mean, till it gets really
bitter.
Yeah,
it got bitter, you know. But it's okay. You're young, you move past it, you get over it, and that's it. And I don't hold ill will. And you know, the fact is, you know, when you hold ill will and so forth, all it does is hurt yourself and hurts your zen, and it makes it harder for you to move forward.
That is so true. Yeah,
yeah,
so true.
And it's funny because later on, even when I got into wrestling, even though I was my own entity, I wound up being in factions and so forth. And or tag partners. And so, I always had that connection because I am also the kind of guy that likes to work off of other people's energy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and here, especially, Grindhouse Radio is one of my big projects and so forth. I have three other co-hosts, my engineer, blah, 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 blah. These are the people that I we own the business together and we work together, so it's kind of like the same thing as a band.
Yeah. Except, no dynamic.
You know what I mean? But the difference is I'm the well-seasoned guy that's been around for a long time. Yeah. They all started out as my interns. They know and they respect where I've been and what I do and who I am.
Yeah.
And even though everybody kind of has to make some of their own mistakes, they'll respect the fact that I've already been there, done that, and have given them, as much insight as humanly possible before they make those mistakes.
Well, what they've learned, and I think all of us have to learn that. My dad said it once. I've talked about this so many times on different shows. Einstein once said, true knowledge is through experience. My dad said it in a different way. Firsthand experience, it's hard to replace that. And you're that guy that's been been there and done it. And they're smart enough, fortunately, and maybe it has more to do with you and the way you come off, it's that they realize that. Because otherwise, then you get people going, ah, he's full of shit. And then, you know, nobody listens to anybody. But one more thing about the music industry, which I seems that it's very consistent, is that they talk about the band members. Usually they talk about how it's such a cutthroat industry and how so many bands get screwed out of like big so money. Much. Right.
Yeah. It's not just in music. I mean, that's entertainment in general. You know, musicians unfortunately have to deal with, a lot more layers than other entertainers. You know what I mean? Where, you know, but it's entertainment in general. We get, it's like a, you know, and everybody's also aiming for that same contract. You know what I mean? Like everybody's working for that same, it's like a dog eat dog world. And we're all wearing Milk-Bone underwear. It's pretty much what it comes down to.
Yeah. When you get into something like that, it's kind of like, you got to learn how to play the game to a degree.
Yeah.
You know, to stay in it. I understand that, you know, cause you're right. It happens across the board with a lot of things. So after you get done doing your tours, is this when you started getting into the wrestling gig?
Yeah. So, while I was touring, and while I was in music, you know, I had done a lot of work. I had worked for, a lot of music publications and so forth. And, I worked for the Long Island Voice, which is the Village Voice's sister. It was the sister publication. It was kind of like, brainchild of the owner, the former owner of, the Village Voice, his daughter's thing. So, I wound up working there and I was doing sales, but I was dealing with all the music, the clubs and the stores, and because I knew everybody, you know, and it was a no brainer. And at the end of the day, they knew that I liked to have my hands in a little bit of everything. They knew that I liked wrestling in general. And they'd asked me if, one day they were shorthanded on photographers, and I have which is not anywhere, you can't find it in my bios or anything, but fun fact is that I'm a published photographer. Even though I did it way back when, things were published in all different types of books, and they said, hey, we need a photographer to go with one of our people, Bill Jensen, one of the writers. He was going to go do something on a pro wrestling event that was taking place. It was like a small convention that was happening at like a Knights of Columbus. And they're like, look, we'll pay you to go and take some pictures. If you don't mind, you'll get to meet some people, do whatever you want to do. I said, yeah, sure. Why not? You know what I mean? I was free that day. And so I went down and I wound up meeting a whole bunch of people who wound up becoming good friends of mine later on in life. And and the first thing I did while I was working there is I walk up to, I don't know if you're familiar with many people in the wrestling industry, but I'm sure you've heard of the Iron Sheik.
Yeah, I have.
So I walk up to Sheiky, and he knew what I was there for. And he says to me, you look like you could be a wrestler. I train you to be a wrestler, and you're going to be great. And, and I'm sitting here going, oh, my God, all right, this is interesting. And and again, I always loved pro wrestling. Now, my whole thing was, I was the guy that, I went to in between my time, because I grew up in Uniondale, New York. I was one of the only white kids. It was, growing up, and white Jewish kids nonetheless. Oh. And they wound up putting me, my mother, even though I was fine being there, my mother started getting worried because the middle school was going to be rough. And I'm like, I'm already sitting and fighting, in the streets with all my boys, but she's like, I'm putting you into private school. And I went to a private Jewish school for, a few years before I went back to high school in Uniondale. That being said, when I was in the private school, that was what introduced me to metal and so forth, and other music other than hip hop. And it also introduced me to pro wrestling. And we used to have parties upon parties that I'd go to, where it'd be all like the WrestleManias and the SummerSlams and the yada yada yada, is the King of the Ring, and I'd be the one sitting and tossing people all over the place. Like, that was my thing. I was always a strong kid. I wasn't ripped. That was never my thing. I was always just naturally strong. Right. So I'd be just tossing people around and so forth. So, you know, when Shiki said this to me, I laughed and I was like, well, you know, I always thought it would be really fun and something to pursue. He said, I train you, blah, blah, blah. So long story longer, his agent at the time, and he might be back with him now, but he goes by the name of Eric Snapshot Sims. Used to take a lot of the photos of the boys, which is where he got Snapshot from. And Eric started talking to me, and he was doing what, you know, we call in the industry a work. And he started working me and saying, oh, yeah, you know, we can, you can fly out to Georgia and you can work with Sheik there, or he could fly him here and you pay this, that, and the next. I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. You know, I'm not ready for any of that. He just mentioned this to me, and I was just like, oh, that sounds interesting. It so happened that another legend in the industry, Brett the Hitman Hart, had been there signing as well.
Yeah.
And he happened to be leaving. I think he was signed to WCW at the time. I know it wasn't WWF, because it was later on, after he had an issue with the company. So I'm pretty sure it was WCW, but he had to get out and get onto a flight. But he had overheard the conversation. He kind of pulled me to the side, and he knew what I was there for. And and he said to me, he goes, listen, if you're really interested in getting into the industry, you know, if you have any questions, here's my email. You know, feel free to give me drop me an email, and I'm happy to tell you, you know, what to look out for and so forth when looking into schools. Yeah. And that's what happened. I wound up finding in one of the magazines, I found a school that was opening up called the Long Island Wrestling Federation, the Doghouse. And I went down, I emailed him. I said, hey, this is what I'm looking at. And he told me this is what to look for. Went there. Everything seemed legit. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to start wrestling, huh? Yeah. And and the rest is history. I'm one of the Doghouse originals. A lot of major names came out of there with very big branded gimmicks, you know?
Yeah. Is this one of those schools? So I understand you. I've actually interviewed one or two wrestlers. Terry was his last name. I think the guy lives in, you remember that? Charlie? Yeah, I can't think of his first name. Anyway, is it a school that you go to learn how to wrestle, to learn how to do the moves? Is that what that's all about?
Yeah, you go there, you learn how to take the bumps. You learn how to wrestle, you learn all the secrets, you learn everything that you're supposed to learn. For the most part. And then you start working in the real world, and you learn, you know, all other secrets and so forth, and develop your own style. And I went there, I did the Doghouse thing, and I was young, I was cocky, I was, I probably shouldn't have been as cocky as I was at the time, but I was building a brand, and I was loving every second of it, because I felt like I had the full power, you know what I mean, rather than in the music industry, you know, where I was with these other people, you know, to create. Yeah. I was creating for myself. In entertainment in general, having an ego is a good thing. Yeah. It's just about because you need that ego, you need that thick skin to get, you know, to deal with all the rejection in the industry and to deal, you know, and just to look, because if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else is going to believe in you.
Correct. No, that's
so for me, you know, like having an ego wasn't the issue. It was the fact that I didn't know how to keep it in check.
There you go.
See what I'm saying? Yep. And, you know, you're young, you learn and so forth. But I also had something to prove. So me coming up in pro wrestling, and I did a lot with pro wrestling. I built my career, you know, from pro wrestling. So
yeah. So now in the school that you went to, did you in baseball, for example, you have minor leagues, and it's pro, but you have the minor leagues before you actually hit the big leagues. Is it like that in wrestling, or did you go right to the big leagues?
First and foremost, you wind up doing student matches. Those are kind of like the lower tier. You do the student matches, and then you go to what they call the independents. So the independents is independently owned, you know, federations and so forth all around the world. And the thing about that is, you have people like myself and like others who were out there that were professional. We took our tests. We passed, you know, whatever schools we were in. We got our official licenses, fingerprints, the whole nine yards. That's what makes it professional. Just because you're on television doing WWE or TNA or AEW or anything, that doesn't make you, you know, that doesn't mean that you're not professional if you're not working for one of these guys. It just means that you're not on television. Yeah. I was a professional and I was out there and yes, I did do a lot of television as well. It's just, you know, I want to make it a point that a lot of people think, oh, well, you're not on WWE. So that means that you're not, you haven't made it. You haven't done it. And right. Yes, I did WWE when it was WWF. That being said, doesn't mean that you're not a professional if you've already done everything that you're supposed to do. Sure. And you're just working on the independence. And right. Once you've been to WWF or WWE or anywhere else that's out there, the only way to go after that is either retire or go back to the independence. Right. It just means you're an independent contractor. Gotcha. You're still a professional. Yeah. Just like if you're going to have an electrician come in, you want somebody who's a bonded professional, somebody who's going to come in and do the job and do it right. You're not going to get Joe Schmo off the street because Harry around the way said, hey, this guy knows how to put in a good, outlet. No, you're going to get somebody that knows what they're doing. Right. It's the same type of thing. So these different federations, would want to pull in. Some of them were a little more careful than others, but guys that, you know, had professional backgrounds, they were licensed. Yeah. New York State has a strict license policy or did. They would prefer to put a pro in the ring rather than some guy who didn't necessarily train the right way or yeah. never finished training or, you know, thought they were big out there. And, but I think you get the gist of
it. Yeah, I do. WWE and WWF, was that Jim McMahon?
Vince McMahon.
I mean, Vince McMahon.
Yeah. Yeah. WWE is Vince McMahon. And then Vince McMahon, that was Vince McMahon Sr. And then WWF was, Vince McMahon Sr. WWF and WWE is Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
He still runs it to this day. Although I think that he's going to be leaving soon. I think he's going to be giving it to his daughter and his son.
Yeah, he dabbled in bodybuilding in the natural. They started an organization. Oh, yeah. You remember that?
Yeah.
I thought it was him that did that. So I'm just curious about that. One of the things I wanted to ask you also, now in order to, did you have your own agent or handler? Once you're in the school, do they provide you with that? Or do you get your own agent at this point to line up these different matches in different federations?
The bigger name you are, you know, the more of an opportunity you have to get an agent to set all those up. At the time I was new. So I set it all up myself. And back then, again, we didn't have the luxury of the internet. We didn't have the luxury of the track record that I knew all the promoters already. I had to build from scratch. Yeah. So I would be going and looking in the with the libraries and the microfiche, you know what I mean? To pull up, you know, different magazines and so forth, just to figure out who I could contact in different areas. And, I did it all myself and I wound up working all around the world. And, it was a lot of fun. But it's also a lot of work and people don't see. That's the thing is, you know, everybody sees a nice wrapped gift package.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is the final product and this is what you see, but you don't see everything that goes in, you know, behind the scenes. You don't see the years of hard work and effort and blood, sweat, tears that go into building that brand.
Sure.
It was a lot of work. And the funny thing is that you've got a lot of people. I call them the go nowheres, which are also haters. Mm-hmm. The people that hate the fact that, you know, you're doing X, Y, and Z, but you're putting yourself out there to do X, Y, and Z. Yep. You know what I mean? And all they could do is badmouth you because they can't just find it in themselves to do X, Y, Z to get them, you know what I mean, to that next level.
Yeah. Always a
price. Am I making sense?
Oh yeah. Always a price to pay. It's never what you in the front, you know, it's always like, right. You know, people say, one hit wonder or you know, they shot up to the top. They have no freaking idea.
No clue.
All the, you know, the turmoil that you have to go through to get to that spot, you know,
right.
The question I have is, this is as it relates to setting up a match with somebody. I would imagine that there would be, that you have to be careful as to who your opponent is and vice versa, because I mean, look, part of it is, I believe, look, the stuff that you guys do out there is real. As far as the move, you got to be athletes to be able to do the stuff out there. We know that, you know, you're not really, you know, it's not like a boxing match to that extent where you're trying to take somebody out. You got to do it in a way that's entertainment. That said, do you have to be careful in who you match up with so it is a good match for the entertainment value? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, you know what it is that there's a lot of trust that goes into this. And, you know, and the problem with the independent world is that, you know, the promoter can put you with whoever they want to put you with, and you will rise or fall depending on what the promoter wants. And, you know, they can have their nephew who has, you know, 2 days of training and not a clue in the world of what they're doing and try to put you in the ring with them. Now you can either take it or you can leave it, you know? So, you know, like, do you need that money? Do you not need that money? You know, like, so it's, you don't have much of a choice. But at the end of the day, you have every choice, because you could say no.
Oh, sure.
You know, but I've been, you also have people that want to prove themselves, or that want to, or, you know, you have, there might be what we call heat, which is like bad blood and so forth with you or somebody you work with, whatever it is. And people want to try to, you know, come at you. Like, I can't tell you how many times, because again, I was very outspoken back when, and, you know, I was very active, and I'm a big self-promoter. I know how to promote. I know how to brand. So instead of taking that as, you know, he's doing what he needs to do to get, you know, to make things work. People take that as being cocky, and people take that as being,
I'll tell you.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing that they didn't realize is that just because I was a nice guy, and maybe I was a little sweeter in the face when I was younger, you know what I mean? And, you know, lighter guy, I knew I was also tough as nails and could back my stuff up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I grew up in the streets, and I would knock the crap out of people.
Yeah.
So when guys would, you know, and again, and it happened, especially when you have some issue with some guy in the back, and you know, and you don't know, and they're sitting because they're having, you know, somebody has heat with you, you know, and then they try to get in the ring and they want to pull some crap. Cool. But at the end of the day, you know, I have a family. I have people that I'm taking care of. I'm trusting my body with you.
Yeah.
So if you're not going to be respectful and you're going to go back on that trust, you know, I am going to lay it down, and I am going to smack the taste out of your mouth. And then I'm going to go back to being professional. You know what I'm saying? So I always gave what was called potatoes. So what do you call it? You give me one potato, you hit me a little too hard. All right. I'll take that as you work stiff, you work tight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you have cameras right in front of you, it's always better to work a little tight, so you're making more contact, you know, and you know, cause you want it to look real.
Yeah.
That being said, that's potato number one. Potato number two, you kick a little hard, or you know, like whatever. All right. This is habit forming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, third time, there is that you don't get another shot.
Right.
And you know, and I've had a guy, this one dude, I'll never forget. You know, he thought that he was helping a friend out because his friend had some heat with me, and I never tried to have heat with anybody, but you know, you can't help what people are feeling.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I was in the ring, and you know, he called something I did, you know, did what he asked. And he came, he had steel-toed boots on, and he gave me a shot right in the back of my spine, you know, with the steel toe, you know, and that hurt. It hurt. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter how tough you are.
Yeah.
You're getting kicked in the back of the spine. You know what I mean? It hurts. So I rolled out of the ring. I was like, all right, and let him come back out, come after me, threw me back in the ring. He called something else. So I was like, yeah. And I gave him what we call a hangman. What do you call it? And I gave him, it's like a clothesline. And I grabbed his neck, and I gave him such a shot, and I pulled him right down to the right down to the mat, knocked him out. He was and I worked the crowd for a couple minutes till he came back, and you know, and then I came, went to pick him up, and I said, are we done? And he goes, I'm so sorry, and I said, then I finished him. I tossed him around the ring for another couple minutes, and then I took it home and went to the back. And when we were in the back, you know, he came up to me and he's like, you know, I'm so sorry. I was like, get away from me. I don't want to hear it. You know, it's like, we're done, you know? Yeah. And again, you know, you have people that, again, they want to prove themselves. They want to, you know, they think that there's, you know, cause there is a hierarchy in the locker room, in any locker room, and so forth. And, you know, they just want to prove themselves. And again, you know, what you don't realize is that, you know, this is not a game. This is a business.
That's right.
And a business is there to make money. We are there to make money together. We're there to build up each other and make each other worth something. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So this way, right. You know, and people don't, they think it's real. you know, even the people in the business, some people think it's real. They don't realize it's about how many asses you put in seats,
right,
and how many people you're going to get, you know, to come and buy your 8x10s and take pictures and so forth. And, you know, when I have a whole table full of what we call gimmick, which is products, you know, it's like 8x10s and all that, yeah, and you have nothing, then who's doing their job and who's not?
Right.
You know what I mean? Don't get mad at me.
Yeah, you got to know the end game. That's for sure. You said something earlier that I wanted to ask you about. Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you are definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian power burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
In the ring, you said the guy called out something. Are you in the ring? Are you guys talking to each other? Like, do you have code? Like, this is what's about to happen, just so you have a warning?
We communicate. We communicate. That. Yeah. Well, there's a couple different ways. I mean, look, first of all, especially when you're working overseas, or people are coming in, you know, like, and they're working here, you know, like, sometimes you got people, there's a language barrier. So, you know, a lot of it is, you can read the other person and, yeah, you know, they might give you a little signal, or, you know, like, they'll be doing one of these and you know, something's coming. And that's also called working catch can. Catch can means you don't talk in the ring. You kind of just let it flow and you kind of go with it and roll with the punches. I can work catch can. But a lot of people, you know, a lot of people also, they'll call out the spots in the ring, you know, drop down tackle, leapfrog, you know, hip toss, you know what I'm saying? And so when somebody is like, you know, they're pushing them back to the ropes and you see their heads are right next to each other, yeah, you know, like this, that's usually, you know, when they're sitting and chatting with each other, or somebody's laying down and somebody's going for the pin, they might be rolling up. All right, get up, you know, get some heat, yada, yada, you know. That's
kind of the inside stuff that goes on in the game that, I mean, like I said, I didn't know that was going on, you know,
pretty good. Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this, the catch can, would you say that that's more for the guys that are just really seasoned professionals and they can wing it out there? You know, it's kind of like me when I first started doing the shows, I had scripts that I was really, you know, because I wanted to make sure that the show would keep flowing. But of course, when you're doing it enough, I don't need to do that anymore. I just flow with it.
Right.
Just like a catch can. You know, I have some general information that I want to talk about and just let it flow. Because I like
catch,
it.
Yeah.
Catch, more authentic, I think.
Catch can, in my opinion, is for people who can work catch can and who can kind of communicate in the ring without communicating in the ring. You can work catch can, especially with people that you've known for a long time. And, you know, other people work out their entire matches, you know, with some of my old students, you know, because I taught a lot of my old students, you know, I would, sometimes I'd write out the match, which you usually don't do, but, you know, I wrote out the match because I wanted to make sure, since they weren't experienced enough, that right, we had to went out and had a good match. You know what I mean? You know, at the end of the day, and I'm giving away secrets here, so we should put a spoiler alert on the,
okay.
You know, but, you know, the fact is, you know, the industry is full of many different types of people. And, sure. You know, it's good to get in the ring with another pro who respects you and respects your work and respects the fact that, you know, we're in this to make a living, and we all have families, and we're going to go in there, we're going to do a dance, and once the dance is over, we're going to shake hands and, you know, we're still going to be friends. You know what I mean? And that's
some good advice that I got when I first started bodybuilding for competition. You know, you have, part of that is that you have to do a routine, you know. And right, one of the things that I got is really good information. I wonder if this translates into the ring, is that the guy that owned the gym at the time, Jerry Bailey, in fact, he's a client of mine now, he said, look, when you're up there, do less things better in your routine instead of trying to do all these, you know, different poses and you know, because you're compromising everything at that point. Now, when you're
less is more.
Yeah, less is more. So when you're in the ring, especially with newbies, somebody who's a more of a rookie, is it better just to do fewer moves and do them spectacular to make it entertaining? Would that kind of follow the same line of thinking?
Again, anybody you speak to is going to give you a different answer. And again, I'm well removed from the ring at this point. You know, not saying that I would never go back, but you know, in terms of my personal opinions on this, you know, I am a gimmick guy. You know, when I go into the ring, I like to work my gimmick. You know what I mean? Yeah. Big guy, scary, you know, I like to do big man, little man in the ring. You know what I mean? Where, you know, it's a David and Goliath type of situation. Yeah. You know, the whole point of professional wrestling as it was, where I was in it before me, you were to tell a story in the ring. And to tell a story in the ring doesn't mean you have to be jumping off the top rope, you know, in every 2 seconds, high flying moves and so forth. Just like you're saying, the different flexing and, you know, different poses. You don't need all of that. You need to be able to tell a story and to portray it and to sell it to the audience.
Yeah.
If you can sell it to the audience, you can work a headlock for 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Yes. Now, and people have done it. Go watch Bret Hart. Go watch, you know, Owen Hart. Go watch, you know, so if you can work a headlock, you can work a match. You don't have to kill yourself. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The big, back when, if you recall, and you know, like, you know, and I'm sure you remember the old school WWF days where you had Hulk Hogan and Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff and so forth. You might remember before that. But if you remember, a body slam used to be a finishing move.
Yeah, right.
A leg drop used to be a finishing move.
Yeah.
It's because work less, work smarter, not harder. Now guys are walking around like this, you know, in their 20s and 30s because they're not working smart. They're doing high flying off the top rope here and doing this there and doing all these crazy big moves, which, yeah, they're amazing. They look great. But are you getting paid any more to do that?
Right. If you're not.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
worry about working the crowd. Yeah. And you know what I mean? And then half of these people, they don't realize that they're spending so much time doing all these crazy moves. They're not worrying about building their brand.
Right.
I could go out there, do 5 moves in a match, and then I'll have people, you know, buying all my crap at the booth, you know, like, and people would be pissed at that, you know, like, but at the end of the day, like, I did my moves and I did them well. Now, can I do all those other moves? Not all of them, but I could do plenty of them.
Yeah.
I taught a lot of people how to do those moves.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you don't need all that. So I have a couple of the big moves that I would go to every so often when I felt the need and I'd go to the top rope and I was going to drop that top rope elbow. Everybody knew.
That was special.
Oh man. Yeah, okay. This is coming.
Right.
If I went to that top, they go, oh, yeah. You know, oh my God, you know, like, so that's what I'm saying, you know, like make them count, make every move count. Just like when you're saying, you know, in bodybuilding, make the poses count.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't need too many of them. Work the crowd. How do you work the crowd? By hitting that pose and making it, you know, and connecting with the audience that you know, they go, wow. So you want to connect with the audience. Boom. Strap on a wrist lock. Walk around the ring. If you're a heel, work the crowd. Yeah. Look at the, you know, like, whatever it is. Pick out a couple of people in the audience, make them your, you know, your female dog. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying not to curse. You know what I'm saying? But like, you know, and get that feedback, get that, because that's what it is. If they're screaming and hollering in a positive manner, you've done your job.
Yeah.
If they're screaming and hollering in a negative manner, you're doing your job.
So
if they're not making noise, you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So work the crowd. And then that's how you build the fan base and you build your brand off of that. And, you know, for me, it was very important to me to, you know, when I went out and worked, you know, that I wasn't doing all these 5 million crazy moves and, you know, whatever it was, we made each move count. And some people like that. Some people don't, but you know,
everybody, you know,
Can't please everybody.
That's for sure. And moving on now, one of the things that you said in your bio was that, and I don't know if it's been your crowning achievement, but it's kind of one of your proudest, I think, ventures, is the, tell us about the distillery and your name to that.
Oh, you're talking about Jack Daniels?
Jack Daniels.
It was just something, you know, it was kind of like a cherry on the top kind of a thing of, you know, like, it's just a really cool thing. You know, I was doing an appearance, we were doing for my comic book, Brimstone and the Border Hound series. We were doing a launch party in Manhattan. Everything had been set up, and my buddy Bumblefoot from, he was with Guns N' Roses at the time. He's with like Asia now and so forth. But, you know, he was doing a guest appearance in the comic, and what do you call it? We, you know, had set up a whole event, and, you know, like it was a big to do. I think it was like Chelsea Manor, I think was the place. And you know, we were going to have a full house, obviously it's way pre-COVID. And, what do you call it? It turns out that earlier that day, the people from the Jack Daniels distillery happened to be at the location, and everything was like being set up, and like the posters and the Brimstone stuff and the Bumblefoot stuff was all over the place. And they were like, what's going on here tonight? Are they going to be here? You know, and they're like, yeah. And they're like, oh, you know, and they happen to be fans. And
yeah.
They were like, what do you call it? We have this new drink out. It's called it's the Jack Daniels Honey, which they were moving at the place, you know? So, it was when Honey was first coming out, they're like, you know, we'd really like to make a couple of drinks, like specialty drinks for them. You know, would that be cool? And they're like, sure, we'll make it a surprise. So we got there, and they had, what do you call it? Jack Daniels honey made drinks for us that we, you know, then, you know, done in our honor. So mine is the Brimstone Red, they called it. And, you know, it was absolutely delicious. And I think he had the Bumble Shot, you know what I mean? Which was made of Jack honey and something else. And then we had one more for one of the characters in my comic, which was called the Purple Boa. Cause he has a big purple boa, this character Luscious. You know, so yeah, it was like, you know, it's not like a crowning. It's something that I personally, it's not like something that's huge, you know, but you know, people drink it all around the world, you know, they go to the bar and they can drink like a cool drink, and, you know, and I think that's cool. You know what I mean? It's just the little things, man.
Sure.
It's the little things, you know, like they have a Brimstone coffee, you know, based for, you know, that was made for me, you know, on the secret menu for Starbucks, you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. There's, you know, there's the Brimstone pizza at a bunch of places, Brimstone burgers, Brimstone milkshakes, spiked milkshakes using the Jack honey, you know, different. So like, cause I'm in the foodie verse also. So like, what do you call it? You know, I have places all around the country, you know, who, you know, they have a Brimstone, you know, item on their menu. Yeah. It's a really, and for me, it's just really cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's just cool.
I can tell. Cool. Is that something that you get residuals off of?
Some of the ones that are using my product, like, you know, the ones that use like either my hot sauces or my seasonings or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, that I will, obviously, because they have to buy the product.
Right.
You know, but I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just think it's fun and it's cool. And you know what? Every time that I'm in the area, they invite me and come in. They take care of me. They take care of whoever I'm with. And that's good enough for me, man. I am not in this to get rich. You know what I mean? Do I make money? Sure. You know what I mean? Yeah. I've got a lot of things going on. I've always got things in the hopper ready to go. But you know, I'm not in this to get rich. I'm here to make a legacy. I'm building a legacy that's going to live well after I'm gone. Things that'll take care of my kids and my family and my kids' kids and so forth. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm going to nickel and dime people, you know what I mean? Like, oh, some people will, you know, but then, but most people don't have the things that I've done and, you know, and it is what it is, you know what I mean? And some people, what was it?
But no, I'm just going to say, you know, one of the things that I've learned is, and this is, you're all about this. I mean, it exudes from your personality, is that when you have, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you have passion for something that you do, it changes the perspective of everything. And you know, you're not necessarily, look, I like making money, but the fact that I have passion, kind of like you do, it seems like the money follows. And it's even, you know what I mean? It's like that money is not the main thing that's driving me, because so many people, when they are doing it, you know, from that perspective, they seem like they're really unhappy. There's something missing. And I think it's that passion, like what you do. Ever since I got into this, you know, bodybuilding, it turned into personal training, blah, blah. It's just like I've never worked a day in my life, and I know you understand right. that.
Yes.
Even though it's work.
Most people, you know, and look, yeah, it is a lot, but don't let people think that it's not work, because it is a lot of work.
It is.
You know what I mean? And just if you, so, you know what I mean? Like here, I'm up till, you know, 5 a.m. sometimes, just like the other night, and then I had to be up at 6, 7 or 8, you know what I mean? And yep. continue. You know, I work long hours. I'm always hustling. I'm always doing things. So, you know, and so for those people out there who are like, you never work in daylight, you are working.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not a chore. It's not a chore.
Yeah. It just,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. It changes the perspective.
Perspective.
Of it.
Right.
Yeah.
But if the second you get into this, anything, whether it's in entertainment, entrepreneurship, anything, when you get into it, expecting to be famous tomorrow, or to be bringing in buco bucks, you know, right away, it's not going to happen, and you're going to lose. That's end of right. story.
I agree.
Don't think of it that way. You need to get into it because you love it and you want to take it and make something and build something beautiful. Do it for yourself. Don't do it for, if you're concerned about what other people think.
Yep.
You're never going to make it. Why? Because guess what? You know, like you're constantly changing in order to make other people happy.
Exactly.
You do things for yourself, and people will come. All right. The money will come. I promise you that.
Yeah.
The money will come. But you need to let it grow. You need to take it and nourish it. You can't take seeds and put them in the ground and expect them to you know, nurture themselves. You have to take it. You have to nurture it. You have to set the ground up, put the seeds in. You have to plant it. You have to cover it. You know what I mean? You know, nice wet soil. Keep it wet. Keep it safe. Make sure that nothing else gets to it. You know what I mean? Like, and eventually it'll grow and blossom and bloom and boom. And, you know, and maybe you take either, whether it's fruit or vegetables or, you know, or flowers, and now you're selling that. And now you're making the money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I do. I get
you
it.
Know, and another thing is social media. People are like, oh, you know, you don't have any social media follow. First of all, I do, so I don't have to worry about that. But, you know, people look at social media. I'm not making, I don't have the numbers. Yeah. I don't have people aren't. Oh, what do I do? Well, you know, if you're worried and concerned about numbers or how many people listen to your show or, but you know, like, guess what? You've already lost.
That's
you're so consumed.
Right. That's right.
I don't care if one person watches my show or listens to my show. I have between 3.5 to 4 million listeners weekly worldwide. I am lucky, but I never gave a damn about how many people were listening.
Yep.
I'm doing it for myself and because I want to put something out there. And what happens is, the people that are listening and the people that become your true fans and people that are paying attention, these are the people that you wind up become, that you're doing it for. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing it because I want to do it, but I do it for myself, but at the end of the day, like these are the people that are supporting me,
sure,
doing my own thing and appreciating, you know, and I want to give back to them for supporting and taking care of me. Does
beautiful.
That make sense?
Yes, it does.
You know, yeah,
it does. And I'd like to, you know, we need to wind this thing up and down, but if there's anything else that you'd like to, cause I think what you just said is a really good parting, you know, shot and really great information. And it stands the test of time. I can relate to you on that, but if there's anything that I haven't talked about that you would like to say before we go, no, now's a good time.
You know, there's just always a lot going on. If you're interested in me or anything that I'm doing, whether it's my businesses or you know, TV, film, voice work, any of that stuff, you go to my official website, therealbrimstone.com. What do you call it? Everything is there. Almost everything. I shouldn't say everything. Almost everything's there. My schedule is usually always pumped up, letting you know where I'm going to be, what I'm doing. When the world opens up, I will be doing the Comic-Con circuit again, like I always have. Meeting and greeting fans. It's one of my favorite things to do. And I've been so sad to not have been able to do that for the past year. Also, you know, if you're interested in hanging out, I'm very, very engaged on social media, especially my Instagram. Insta is where I'm very, very on it. I try to respond to everybody. I'm at The Real Brimstone on Twitter. I'm sorry, on Instagram. I'm verified there. You know, it's me. On Facebook, you know, I've been trying to build my Facebook game again. It's just hard to do everything all at once.
Yep.
But all my social media is up on my official site. You can click it there, find me there. Please engage with me. If you follow me, don't just follow, engage, talk to me, ask questions, make comments. I like that. I thrive on that. I want to know my audience. You know what I mean? So, you know, I appreciate it, but I do also understand that, you know, viewers are what exactly that they're viewers, listeners are exactly that they're listeners. Yeah. And I appreciate that. And I respect that. So if you don't want to write anything, I get it, but I like to hear from you. Every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you know, either on iHeartRadio, on our official website, thegrindhouseradio.com, or Spotify, anywhere you can get podcasts, you can hear our new episodes. And, you know, if you're interested in pop culture and so forth, check it out. And I do some other shows, you know, just everything's up on the website. So you can pretty much navigate pretty easily.
Beautiful, man. You've been a really great interview, and it's been fantastic to learn about what you do. And I do appreciate that. And, you know, maybe one of these days we'll cross paths. You never know.
If I'm in LA, we'll be hooking up.
Yeah, let me know, man. Again, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
See you, bro.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.